Hello, and welcome to Line One, Your Health Connection. I'm your host, Dr. Jillian Woodruff. If you've ever stepped out of the shower in January and felt your skin tighten and itch within minutes, you know Alaska skin is different. If you've spent a long summer day fishing under bright daylight and thought, I don't burn up here, you might be underestimating your risk. Your skin is your body's largest organ. It's not just cosmetic, it's a living barrier, part immune system, part thermostat, part shield. And in Alaska, that barrier is under constant stress. Long hours of summer daylight, ultraviolet light reflecting off snow, months of cold, dry air that quietly break down the skin's protective layer. Today, we're exploring what healthy skin really looks like in the far north, from eczema and winter rash to acne and rosacea in dry climates, to understanding skin cancer risk and prevention. Joining me in studio are two board-certified dermatologists from Miller Dermatology Surgical and Laser Center in Anchorage. Dr. Janine Miller is a Harvard-trained dermatologist specializing in the full spectrum of skin health, including advanced medical and surgical dermatology, innovative treatments for hair loss, and high-end cosmetic and laser dermatology. She is the only dermatologist in Alaska fellowship trained in laser medicine and performs advanced laser treatments for precancers, scars, vascular birthmarks, rosacea, acne, and sun damage. Wow, that's a lot. Dr. Katina Rodriguez-Bazy grew up here in Anchorage and chose to return home after medical school and dermatology training to care for families across Alaska. She specializes in medical and pediatric dermatology, treats conditions like eczema and acne across the lifespan, and is fluent in Spanish, expanding access to dermatologic care for Alaska's Spanish-speaking community. Dr. Miller and Dr. Rodriguez, welcome to Line One.
Welcome. Thank you so much. Happy to be here.
I am happy you're here too. And listeners, you can also join our conversation. Does your skin crack, itch, or flare every winter? Have you wondered what the best treatment options for your child's eczema are? What winter skincare habits have helped or failed for you? Call us toll-free statewide at 1-888-353-5752, 1-888-353-5752, in Anchorage at 907-550-8433, or even email us at line1@alaskapublic.org. Okay, doctors, I want to start with just getting to know both of you and why you do what you do, what first drew you to dermatology. Let's start with you, Dr. Miller.
Well, I've always wanted to be a physician. And in, you know, college and medical school, I realized that I kind of had a little bit of a photographic memory for pictures. So it kind of lent itself to dermatology because we see our diseases. And it's easy to diagnose them if you remember them first time you see them. So it just came easy to me, you know, and I just fell in love with it. And there's also procedures, which I always wanted to do procedures and surgery. I'm kind of a perfectionist with my closures and stuff like that. So I love what I do. We see many different things every single day, from, you know, acne to skin cancers to melanoma, and it's never boring.
I could certainly appreciate that, the variety
yes,
of it. And
exactly.
I like the precision and, you know, accuracy in your closures.
Yeah.
that a lot. Mm-hmm. And the digital or the visual mm-hmm. aspect of it really helps you and kind of drew you to it.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, tell me more about laser medicine as well, because I saw in your bio that you have fellowship training and a special interest in photomedicine and in photobiology.
Mm-hmm.
So are these fancy ways of just saying laser? What does this mean?
Yeah, in a way. So photobiology is a study of how light affects living organisms, but photomedicine is the clinical application of those principles to treat disease. It uses light as a surgical scalpel for a targeted medication. And basically, photomedicine treats those medical conditions with lasers. So yeah, in a nutshell, lasers.
Yeah.
It's basically lasers, yeah. Laser treatment.
I think many people associate lasers mostly with cosmetics, you know, mm-hmm. those outside of dermatology. And so what are some, I think I named a few, but what are the other ways that you use lasers outside of cosmetics?
Yeah, well, while many people think of lasers purely for cosmetic reasons, board-certified dermatologists usually use medical-grade laser technology to treat a wide range of functional and pathological health conditions. Some examples are rosacea, broken blood vessels or telangiectasias, acne, seborrheic dermatitis, psoriasis, even vitiligo. We can treat warts, we can treat fungus, psoriasis, surgical scars, sun damage, precancerous lesions, and my favorite condition to treat, congenital vascular malformations.
Oh, wow. Wow. Do you see a lot of that here in Alaska?
I do. I think I treat most of them here in Alaska because they used to have to travel down to Seattle for that treatment, and it requires a lot of treatments over an extended period of time. And I love the fact that we can do it here in Alaska now.
Wonderful. Mm-hmm. Well, Dr. Rodriguez, let's turn to you. Tell us about yourself and why you do what you do.
Yeah, and thank you for having us. So I think what originally drew me to dermatology was that, it's very visual, and I feel like there's a really good team with the patient. It's very tangible to the patients as well. They can see the progress with us, and so we can share the joy of getting people better in that way and really make an impact. I'm originally from Puerto Rico, but I grew up in Anchorage, Alaska, so it was really exciting to be able to come back and practice here. I'm fluent in both English and Spanish, and so I enjoy seeing the Spanish-speaking community in town as well. And I like seeing patients of all ages, adults, kids, and I also enjoy doing procedures and small surgeries, removing skin cancer cysts. It's really fun.
So you both have mentioned dermatology is a variety of issues, and it blends medical care, surgical care, cosmetic care. Dr. Rodriguez, what is your passion? What are you most excited to treat?
It's hard to pick just one. I think, that's hard. I enjoy treating, chronic disease is sometimes really rewarding to be able to tweak treatments and help patients feel comfortable and get relief from things that have been around for a while and will likely be there, a long time as well, and just finding the right treatment can be really rewarding. Yeah.
Are most patients that come to you, are they self-referred or are they referred from their primary care?
That's a good question. We have a mix. A lot of our referrals are from other patients. That's probably our majority.
Best type.
Yeah, it is. They usually refer you. Great patients refer other great patients. And so word of mouth is a big source of our patients. And then the second probably is other physicians referring.
I think people may think that dermatology care is something, luxurious. And you may not think of that straight away if you're having a skin condition. You may think that it's more for those who can, afford that care or those who want cosmetic care. Mm-hmm. So do you see this misconception more or less now? Is it changing?
Well, we take most insurances at our office. So we're even taking VA, TriWest, we're taking Medicare. We take most commercial insurances, so patients usually don't have to worry about the cost. We try our best to meet patients that don't think that they can afford it. I always work with them, and we figure out treatment plans. It's not the medical aspect of dermatology is usually 100% covered by people's medical insurance. So. We'll work with you. don't let something fester or bother you and don't come in for those reasons.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about these reasons. So let's zoom out a bit. I know many of us have heard of the skin barrier, but in plain language, I want you to maybe just describe what is our skin? What is this skin barrier? Why is it so critical to our health?
In plain language, the skin barrier is the outermost layer of your skin that acts as your body's frontline shield. A healthy skin barrier has two primary jobs that's essential. So keeping the good stuff in, it seals the water and electrolytes in your body, and stay hydrated. Mm-hmm. And without this barrier, the moisture inside your body would simply just evaporate away. And then it also keeps the bad stuff out. It blocks bacteria, viruses, toxins, and allergens from penetrating your skin or entering your bloodstream. But it also serves as a physical defense against UV radiation and environmental pollution.
Pretty important.
Mm-hmm. Totally.
Okay, moving on to this winter itch then and this winter rash. So in some way, the skin barrier is affected. What is being described when you're talking about this winter itch? And in this 9 months of winter that we have, I'm sure this is pretty significant.
Yeah, for sure. In the dermatology world, winter itch is usually known clinically as astigmatic eczema or eczema crackle. It's a direct result of something called transepidermal water loss. When the skin loses too much moisture and its protective oils, it essentially starves and begins to crack, and it leads to a specific set of symptoms.
And is this something that is increasing in severity in Alaska, or is it more even in children of Alaska? Is there an increased severity of eczema?
In the wintertime, for sure. So we do see, starting in November, when the temperature starts to drop, an increase in eczema patients for sure coming in.
So what's the difference between just dry skin and eczema?
That's a very good question. So dry skin usually feels tight or mildly itchy, especially after a shower or being in the wind, being outdoors. It typically stops itching, though, when you apply a good moisturizer. But eczema, or also known as atopic dermatitis, it's known as the itch that rashes. So the itching is so intense, it's persistent. It can keep you awake at night and often doesn't go away with moisturizer alone. It usually needs other treatments.
The itch that rashes.
The itch that rashes. Yeah, first, most eczema patients say that, you know, they're so itchy that they scratch, and then the scratching causes the rash sometimes.
Wow.
Yeah, I know. It stinks.
So then first-line treatment for this, because you said it doesn't go away with typical moisturizer. So can you tell us about the difference between, like, moisturizer and emollients and ointments and
what's recommended
for this situation?
So in general, dermatologists recommend against lotions. And I know that sounds a little crazy, but most lotions have alcohol in them and they dry out the skin. So we recommend an oil, an ointment, or a cream. And the best way to apply it would be immediately after you get out of the shower, because that's how you can lock the moisture in. We also recommend against anything fragranced. So unfragranced products are better. I like something called Vanicream products for patients with really sensitive skin. Not taking hot showers, and I know this is something that's controversial, but lukewarm showers are better for people with sensitive skin. And I know people, that's really hard for us here in Alaska.
Yes.
It's really hard to not take a very nice hot shower, but it is drying out your skin in the wintertime.
Yes, a hot shower is very comforting.
I know.
And it also seems strange too, because we talk about this with hair. And if you, like, taking a shower and you have this water, how is that leading to drying out your skin? Because you're in water.
If it's hot, it dries out your skin because it's a difference in temperature, right? So just like we talked about before, the transepidermal water loss, the difference in the humidity causes the drying out of the skin.
Yeah,
oh, that's
that change.
A good point.
When the skin is wet, it's a great time to put on the moisturizer to seal that water in. But if you don't, that differential with the environmental dryness can kind of suck more water out of your skin.
Yeah. Very good point. Okay, sucking the water
so
out
just
of the skin.
Really,
yes.
It's like a sponge.
Full glazed donut.
The air is like a
moisturizer.
Sponge.
Yeah.
Yes, and I know when it comes to brands and things that make lotions, they also have these other products in their line that people could get even, you know, over the counter. Now, what about Vaseline? I've heard this, I think, back when my kid was a baby and had dry skin and then had eczema, and they said you can just do Vaseline. How true is this? Can you just do Vaseline?
I love Vaseline. Mm-hmm. It's an oldie but goodie, very low sensitivity. People don't tend to have reactions to something like Vaseline. It's yeah, I tried and true. It's a good good barrier.
Okay.
Yeah.
So
I
the
agree.
Point is to hold in the moisture, something to stop loss.
Help that skin barrier.
Yes. Okay, so steroids, I know, are also typical treatment options for many things in dermatology, and I'm talking about topical steroids. Mm-hmm. But I know that many parents and, you know, adults worry about the use of topical steroids. So how do you counsel families about their safe use, and when would you progress to steroids?
Well, topical steroids are very safe if they're used correctly. I usually recommend not using steroids for more than 2 weeks at a time in most conditions, like for a rash. However, there are some conditions that warrant uses for longer periods of time, like psoriasis. But we counsel patients on the exact usage in these cases and the possible side effects associated with topical steroids. But we can also offer patients non-steroid treatment options and new medications such as biologics.
And it's a very exciting time in dermatology. We do have so many new options that are non-steroidal that, you know, we often reach for the steroids that, you know, again, tried and true, they do work well. But if it's something that we aren't getting good enough control with using these just sporadically, there are many options nowadays that are not steroids that we can discuss.
Well, so that may be the next step. So you use steroids, and then some people may not respond.
Sometimes they don't, or they find that they have to use it very frequently, and then we start to think maybe the risks outweigh the benefits in those cases, and we can switch to something else. Yeah.
So, as you know, I'm a gynecologist. I think I have a professional obligation to bring the vulva into almost every medical conversation. But I do have a point. There are a lot of vulvar skin conditions that are very similar to what you would see elsewhere on your body. So we do use a lot of topical steroids, but let's say in the condition lichen sclerosis, the topical steroids are not only helping to resolve the symptom of itching, but they also are decreasing inflammation, decreasing actually progression to squamous cell skin cancer. Are there parallels in your world where the steroids would do more than just resolving symptoms?
I think that's a really great example, and I'm just so happy that you brought that up. We see so many times people are very shy about, you know, this important part of their body, and we always offer, you know, to check if we're doing a skin check, and so many times we run into women that have lichen sclerosis and they haven't felt comfortable reaching out. So very important to see someone if you're having symptoms like that. But yeah, I think getting infections on the skin when you have something like eczema or psoriasis, if it's poorly controlled, whether it's because you don't have access or maybe you're afraid of using something like topical steroids, sometimes we see that it can become infected and you can get really serious, you know, complications. So, yeah, it's important to get the appropriate treatment.
All right, and then with the skin, you have infection on top of infection.
Yeah.
Which really complicates things and getting to the root cause of where it starts, because it may progress into something different entirely by the time you see it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, maybe you can talk to us about what should bring someone into the dermatologist, especially let's focus on the dry skin or the eczema. And maybe it should be, maybe they've seen their primary. Is there a point where it progresses to them needing dermatology care?
Well, we're happy to see them from the very beginning. So don't wait. Come on in, especially if what you're using is not working. We take the time and listen to patients' concerns and instruct them how to use all these medications. And we would be very, very happy to see the patients. We can.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think if it's something, you know, simple, like I know our primary care colleagues can manage some of those things, but if we feel like it's not improving or you still have questions or concerns, we're always happy to help.
Mm-hmm. And what if they haven't seen anybody for the situation? Are there any red flags that should say you should go and see someone, get more help?
I think any wound that doesn't heal within a month needs to be checked. You know, pimples shouldn't last that long. And usually, you know, if anything isn't getting better after a few weeks, come see us.
Okay, so anything lingering, you've tried things at home and it's not improving, get help.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, we are just getting started, but we do have to take our first break. You are listening to Line One, Your Health Connection. If you have a question or comment for our guests today, give us a call statewide at 1-888-353-5752 or in Anchorage at 907-550-8433. After this short break, we'll continue our discussion of skin health in Alaska with Dr. Miller and Dr. Rodriguez as Line 1 continues statewide. Welcome back to Line 1, your health connection on Alaska Public Media. I'm your host, Dr. Jillian Woodruff. I'm joined today by Dr. Janine Miller and Dr. Katina Rodriguez-Bazy, both board-certified dermatologists at Miller Dermatology Surgical and Laser Center in Anchorage. Dr. Miller is a Harvard-trained dermatologist and the only fellowship-trained laser specialist in Alaska, and Dr. Rodriguez is an Anchorage, grew up here in Anchorage, and specializes in medical and pediatric dermatology, caring for patients of all ages. We are discussing how Alaska's unique environment affects our skin. Do you work outdoors and wonder how much protection you really need? Do you have a mole that concerns you, but you're unsure what to look for? Call us toll-free statewide at 1-888-353-5752, 1-888-353-5752, in Anchorage at 907-550-8433, or email us at line1@alaskapublic.org. So we're going to move into our skin cancer and talking about protecting your skin some more. But before I go into that, I was wondering about telemedicine. And I think that your field would probably lend itself somewhat to using technology to evaluate via telemedicine. Are you doing telemedicine? Do you see that more now after COVID, or are most people coming into the office?
Well, I'm fellowship trained in telemedicine as well, believe it or not.
Okay, I didn't know that was a fellowship.
Yes. Wow. Yeah, so because I knew I was coming up to Alaska to work, and I figured, you know, it would lend itself in Alaska. The problem is that with telemedicine, since COVID, the COVID rules have changed, a lot of the commercial insurers won't pay for it anymore. So it's super frustrating for us when we have a patient, you know, out in Kodiak or down in Homer, and we just want to do a follow-up visit and see how they're doing, but their insurance won't cover it. And so we've been, you know, kind of up against a wall trying to get these visits covered for our patients, but that's probably a conversation for a whole nother day.
Yes. Well, you know, and it goes for us, it goes back and forth, you know, but oh, we'll cover for 3 months, mm-hmm. and then they don't cover, and mm-hmm. then they extend it, they keep extending, yeah. and take, so you never know where you are.
Yeah,
and
it's then frustrating
if you come in at that, you know, if you have your telemedicine at that point in that 1 month where they're not covering, it's really challenging.
Patients get upset.
Of course.
I don't blame them, you know, because mm-hmm. their insurance says they're going to cover it and then they don't.
Right. But this is something that you would be able to take care of.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
I think many cases lend themselves well to something mm-hmm. like telemedicine, especially if it's something like a follow-up visit. But I do think there's something really important about that. At least at first, having that
face-to-face,
a lot of what we do involves, you know, like feeling the skin, looking up close with a tool called a dermatoscope that can really get up close and see features. It's got a specialized light in it. And, you know, sometimes even things like smelling, you know, and looking at it with different lights. Sometimes we use a UV light, you know, it's hard to replace that fully, yeah. but if you've already got the diagnosis and we're just following up, or it's an isolated issue, you know, it can be a very helpful tool, especially for patients that live far away.
Yeah, mm-hmm. like things like acne lend themselves to store and forward telemedicine, where they just take a picture and then they upload it and they show us what they look like.
Yeah.
Stuff like that's really easy to do with telemedicine. But skin checks are not the best.
Those, yeah. Right. Yeah. It'd be hard to assess texture.
Yeah.
And the patient may not have the vocabulary to describe it. Right?
Yeah.
That's not something that we
raised?
Just...
Is it raised? Is it not raised?
Yeah,
okay. mm-hmm. yeah exactly.
Yeah, we don't have that in our normal everyday vocabulary. So how many, I think many people may assume that when you're living this far north or we have such a long winter that skin cancer risk is not as great. What is the reality with skin cancer in Alaska?
Well, while living in Alaska, it does correlate with lower overall skin cancer rates. but the assumption that it completely removes the risk is not entirely true. There's been recent 2026 data and ongoing studies that indicate that while the absolute incidence is lower, the proportion of cases caused by UV exposure remains high still in Alaska, and unique northern factors can elevate the risk for certain populations. Alaska typically reports some of the lowest melanoma incidence rates in the country, about 12.5 to 16.2 cases per about 100,000 people, compared to the national highs like Utah, which is 38.4, Hawaii, which is 24.2. So we do have lower rates, but there's not no risk here in Alaska.
Can you tell us something about the UV light reflecting off the snow and how significant is this?
It's significant. I think we see this a lot in our practice.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I also find that frequently here, there are patients that like travel. And sometimes if people are in Alaska all the time, they feel the need to use things like tanning beds, which are an absolute no-no as far as we're concerned. And they find a way to get sun exposure, unfortunately. And so getting a skin check is important.
Yeah, snow is a very reflective surface. It bounces about 80 to 90% of the sun's ultraviolet radiation back onto the skin and eyes, effectively doubling the exposure. So, and this like intense reflection usually causes rapid sunburns and something called snow blindness, which is photokeratitis and affects your eyes. So even on overcast days, when you're skiing, you should have protective eyewear and wear sunscreen.
That brings up a good point because I think we, you know, talk about sunscreen. People are talking about sunscreen more and more and more. And I do see many dermatologists online when they're putting on sunglasses that they're wearing sunglasses that are maybe different than what other people would wear because they cover a lot more of their
face.
Profile and their face.
I have a pair that go around the side.
Right, yes.
There's also the visors, you know, if you want to go full.
So maybe we should just be watching our dermatologists. What are they doing?
Okay, what are they wearing?
We need to do this so nobody will recognize you when you go out. It's not it's not to be incognito. You're actually protecting yourself.
Exactly, yeah.
So I often forget to wear sunglasses. It doesn't, you know, I'm like, oh, the light doesn't bother my eyes. I'm fine.
Mm-hmm.
You know, how important is it that we're protecting our eyes from the sun?
It's as important as your skin.
Mm-hmm.
It really is. You can get ocular melanoma, you know, so protecting your eyes and protecting your skin is very important while you're outdoors.
And I think you make a good point about traveling because people from Alaska do travel quite a bit and they're probably out in the sun and perhaps not using sunscreen as much when they're traveling, wanting to get those rays of sun in. So really important point. Maybe you can tell us a little bit more about the tanning beds because yes, it's a very popular for many people.
Yeah, there's some studies that show that it can increase your risk of melanoma by 200%. And, you know, we see, unfortunately, a lot of folks with, you know, very bizarre looking moles that, you know, make it really challenging to monitor. And so if you have used tanning beds, you know, don't panic. We can keep a close eye. But if you haven't started that, you know, it's good to hold off on the tanning beds.
What do you say to people that, because I've heard this, they use the tanning beds because of the increased vitamin D?
Sure. And that, I understand.
Take
that
a supplement?
I think so. You know, I think of it more like, well, you know, my can of Diet Coke has water and I'm told I need to have water consumption. So I drink the Coke for the water. I feel similarly about using the sun for vitamin D as a source, you know, it's like, well, we can get it without the bad things. So having it through food and supplements is better, at least from a skin perspective.
Yeah. Well, let's walk through the ABCDEs of skin cancer called, is it for melanoma specifically? Okay. Tell us about that.
Well, the ABCD rule is a critical tool for identifying potential melanoma. Early detection is very important. So the ABCDs are: A is asymmetry. One half of the spot doesn't match the other. Border, that's B, when you have an irregular, ragged, notched, or blurred edges. C is color. Varied shades of brown, black, patches of red, white, or blue. And then D is diameter, which is generally larger than 6 millimeters, which is about the size of a pencil eraser. And then evolving is E, which means any change in size, shape, color, or new symptoms like itching or bleeding. And really, when you should see us, or when you should make an appointment with us, is any of your moles have things like the ugly duckling sign, which is a mole that looks different from the others on the body. Any new or changing spots, and new moles appearing after age 30, or any spot changing over time. Things that are persistent for symptoms, like a spot that itches, hurts, or bleeds without injury. And then any non-healing sores, spots that crust, bleed, or do not heal within about 3 weeks.
How often should the average adult have a skin exam? And are these only people that have moles that they are following, that have skin checks?
Well, mostly everybody has a mole somewhere. And everybody should get a skin check once yearly. And people that have a family history come in more often. They come in usually every 6 months. People with melanoma come in every 3 to 4 months.
And I'm thinking about skin checks. So if you go for your annual exam with your primary care provider, you're typically, you know, in a robe. So let's say you don't know that you have any moles. Is that considered the skin check, or is there a dedicated visit that you're talking about?
A dedicated visit with us, with a specialist. There are many internal medicine doctors that are great at finding skin cancers, and we get referrals all the time, but they don't have the time to do a thorough skin exam while they're also treating all of the other conditions that you have. So that's why we're here. You know, we're here to give you those skin checks very thoroughly.
Okay. Have you noticed differences in how skin cancer presents in skin of color?
Yeah, so sometimes patients that have skin of color, they may feel like they're lower risk and maybe not get their skin checked as often. But, you know, there's something called acral-lentiginous melanoma. And so this affects like palms and soles. Sometimes we can get it on the nails. You know, they can look like dark streaks. And a lot of times those are normal, but it does take a good close evaluation with, again, the dermatoscope tool that we have to evaluate. And, you know, like Bob Marley's death at age 36 is one of the most well-known cases of skin cancer in patients of skin of color. And it was indeed this acral-lentiginous melanoma type. And we also see things like squamous cell carcinoma, and that is, you know, the most common skin cancer in patients with skin of color.
Do you see patients of color presenting at later stages?
Unfortunately, yes. I think it can be harder to detect, and they seek help usually later because of that.
So these areas that you're talking about, the palms of the sole, the palms of your hand or the soles of your feet are lighter in color. So how protective is melanin in your skin tone from cancer?
So it can provide some protection. I think, you know, there's some studies that show that maybe it's about equivalent to SPF 13, you know, so it's not very much.
Yeah.
But
not much.
Also you can get skin cancers in areas that the sun doesn't shine, you know, and so we see it in the vulva, the groin, and the palms and soles. You know, people, you know, get it in their eyes. We see it, you know, in even in like the external part of the ears sometimes. And so there, it's a complex, you know, thing that causes skin cancer. It's sun is definitely one of the highest risk factors, but it can have genetics and even viral, you know, causes. So, yeah.
Sun a big factor, but not the only
exactly.
one.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You can get melanoma in areas that are hidden and receive little to no sun exposure.
That's true. And I think also the marks that I've seen, you know, marks on palms and things, I always think it's just a birthmark. So I can imagine that people would delay visiting someone if that was there. However, if it's something new, it's changed, it's evolved, then we need to get evaluated.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Well, what are precancers? What are some of the precancers that we should be aware of? And these precancers, I'm assuming they will need treatment. I know in my world, we have precancers, you do have to do treatment, or they do progress, and some more rapidly than others.
Well, precancers are something called actinic keratoses, and actinic keratoses can turn into non-melanoma skin cancers, including squamous cell carcinomas or basal cell carcinomas. But the good thing is that we have many treatments for actinic keratoses, including liquid nitrogen, topical medications, and our newer treatment, something called ALA-PDT. And this is where we put a photosensitizing medication on your skin, and then you go under a light to activate it. And this is called a field treatment, and it helps treat the AKs or actinic keratoses that you have and helps prevent new ones in the future. So if a patient's coming in and they have one or two, then we usually treat with liquid nitrogen. But if they have, like, you know, 10, 12 actinic keratoses on their face at one time, then I would consider doing a field treatment to help prevent them in the future.
Maybe we should back up and just talk about the different types of skin cancer, because you've mentioned squamous cell. Mm-hmm. You just said basal cell. Mm-hmm. So maybe just something a little bit about the differences.
So basal cells are the most common type of skin cancer, and they can look, you know, sometimes brown, sometimes pink. They tend to kind of open up and bleed once they're a little bit more advanced. And we see these a lot in sun-exposed areas. Mm-hmm. Squamous cells are the ones that, you know, it's the second most common type of skin cancer, and that's the one that's usually that we're trying to prevent when we treat actinic keratoses, the precancers. There's a low risk that an individual precancer will transform into a squamous cell skin cancer, but oftentimes, if you have multiple, you know, that low risk adds up, and so we usually treat for that reason. And you know, the basal cells have a low risk of spreading and causing internal, you know, harm to your body, but it can locally continue to grow and kind of destroy the tissue, and if we wait, it can be a much bigger nuisance for patients to deal with. Squamous cells, a little bit higher risk of spreading, especially on the head and neck. Unfortunately, that can happen, especially in patients that are, you know, a bit older, or maybe they're on medications that lower their immune system for things like arthritis or cancer. And so we take those seriously as well. And then there's melanoma. Melanoma is the one that is less common but has the highest risk to your health and spread. Yeah.
Highest mortality rate.
Highest mortality.
Mm-hmm. And you said basal cell carcinoma more likely to spread locally on the skin. The other two more, they can spread systemically?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, they can metastasize.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, how has treatment changed for these cancers? I know they're... You spoke about biologics with the skin. How have treatments for melanoma changed in recent years?
Yeah, so with, like, immunotherapy, usually our oncology colleagues, you know, kind of take it from there after we do our diagnosis and removals if there is concern about spread. There are lots of new treatments that thankfully provide a higher survival rate for patients, which is wonderful.
I think the most important part about melanoma treatment and how it's changed over recent years is now we have better outcomes because of regular skin exams, which have helped us find them and treat them much earlier than we would have in the past.
Yes.
We also have some novel new things such as sunscreen gummies that help prevent UV damage. They're often called edible sunscreen, and they're dietary supplements that use antioxidants to support the skin's defense against UV-induced damage from the inside out. So it's made from a tropical fern. It's what's the active ingredient. But they don't block UV rays, and they're never a replacement for traditional topical sunscreen. It's kind of, I explain it to my patients almost as a sunscreen booster. It helps absorb the UV rays because it's a potent antioxidant. But if you used in conjunction with topical sunscreen, it works fantastically, especially for us Alaskans that are, you know, haven't seen the sun for 9 months, and then we go on a vacation for spring break, and we all get burnt.
Your skin's not ready for it.
Yeah, your skin's yes. So, you know, when I go on vacation, and it's safe for children, I give it to my son, and he hasn't burned since we've started the sunscreen gummies at all. Because if you miss a little spot, you know, because applying sunscreen is difficult on children, you know, they're moving, they're running away from you, they don't want to put it on.
In the water,
But he'll ask me for the sunscreen gummies because they taste good.
Right.
So,
wow.
Yeah, so it's I don't go on vacation without them anymore.
And I think with sunscreen, you do have to keep reapplying.
Yes,
and
yes.
It makes a difference the amount that you put on, mm-hmm. and whether you're getting in the water or not. And I think for many, you apply once in the morning and you're just kind of done, especially if you don't burn. So that would be great to, yes, make sure that they're reapplying, but these gummies. So the gummies are not going to prevent you. They can decrease your likelihood of burning.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure.
But you'd still absorb those rays?
Still tan? Exactly. So the sunscreen protects the UV rays, but mm-hmm. then once some UV rays get through, the oral sunscreen actually helps as an antioxidant. It's like taking mega doses of vitamin C in a way. It usually lasts about 4 hours, the sunscreens.
Wow.
Yeah, the sunscreen gummies. You take them 30 minutes before sun exposure.
That is so novel, and I don't know why I have not heard about that. So
we sell them. I'll bring you over some.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. I appreciate that. Well, we have to take one more break, and then we're going to get into acne and rosacea. I think we have some questions that came in about that. So let's take one more break for the stations down the line. And if you have a question or a comment for our guests today, give us a call statewide at 1-888-353-5752 or in Anchorage at 907-550-8433. We'll continue our discussion on skin health across the lifespan when we return. You're listening to Line One, your health connection on Alaska Public Media. Welcome back to Line One. I'm your host, Dr. Jillian Woodruff. I'm joined by Dr. Janine Miller and Dr. Katina Rodriguez-Basie of Miller Dermatology Surgical and Laser Center in Anchorage. Dr. Miller specializes in surgical skin cancer treatment and advanced laser procedures, including care for vascular birthmarks and precancers. Dr. Rodriguez focuses on medical and pediatric dermatology, treating common skin concerns like eczema and acne for families across Alaska. In this final segment, we're turning to acne and rosacea and how Alaska's dry climate can complicate both. You can also join our conversation. Are you struggling with rosacea that seems to get worse in the winter? Do you experience persistent facial redness that just won't go away? Call us toll-free statewide at 1-888-353-5752, 1-888-353-5752, in Anchorage at 907-550-8433, or email us at line1@alaskapublic.org. Okay, I want to move into acne and rosacea, but Dr. Miller, is there something that we need to share before we get to that?
Oh, so there is, so recently there's been a couple studies that have come out that have shown that, a landmark study from Harvard, from my Harvard colleagues in Massachusetts General Hospital that found that patients who received even a single fractional laser treatment were half as likely to develop new facial skin cancer over a 6-year period compared to those that didn't. So treatment of the face with fully ablative carbon dioxide lasers and non-ablative lasers have in recent years been shown to be associated with reduced risk of developing keratinocyte-derived carcinomas, like, you know, squamous cell carcinomas, basal cell carcinomas. And then most recently, the American Society for Laser Medicine and Surgery in 2025, researchers presented evidence that even pulse dye laser, which treats rosacea, and acne and other skin conditions like scars may also reduce the risk for these common cancers. So the good news is that if you're using these lasers for cosmetic purposes,
Wow. They're
also treating you medically to help you prevent skin cancer formation. And all patients can now rest easy knowing they're not just getting lasers to make themselves look prettier or younger. They're also preventing skin cancer in the future. That's your excuse, ladies.
Yes. Okay, that is really fascinating.
I know, right?
Yes.
And these are all new studies that have just come out over the years. And I'm hoping that down the road, maybe as insurance companies see this, they'll start paying for the lasers.
Because it's prevention.
Because it's prevention, yeah. I mean, they pay for some things with lasers, like the congenital vascular malformations, those big stains on people's faces, mm-hmm. And that we can usually get covered at 100%, but a lot of things we have to fight with the insurance companies to cover at this point.
For the congenital vascular malformations, can you treat those in skin of color? Because I know some lasers mm-hmm. you can't. So
yeah, so we have different types of lasers at our office that are safe in darker skin tones. I've treated all different types of skin with vascular malformations over the years, and we just have to be a little bit more cautious with our settings. Sometimes they require a few more treatments, but I'd rather be safe than sorry.
Right. We have an email that came in from Barbara, and she would like you to please speak about treating skin changes that are caused by chemotherapy.
Gosh, that's, I think a lot of times our patients that are on chemotherapy have very dry skin, so making sure you're using a thick cream. I like the Cetaphil in the jar, or even CeraVe has an ointment that is really hydrating, or even plain Aquaphor. Dry skin is very common, and if we are having actual skin changes, rashes, redness, sometimes it's important to get assessed for that by a dermatologist, and we can look at the medications and work alongside the oncologist to come up with a good medication, like treatment plan for it.
Yeah, we work very closely with oncology. Most patients that are on chemotherapy also need a skin check. So it puts them at higher risk for melanoma, for skin cancers. So another thing I hear from patients that are on chemo is that their skin is very crepey, that they've aged very quickly on the chemo, and I see it mostly in the neck, like crepey skin in the neck. And I always tell my patients, after your chemo's done, come see us. We have lasers to fix that. Mm-hmm. So that's fine. But the dry skin that Dr. Rodriguez was talking about is very, very common.
Okay. And that's caused by the chemotherapy as well.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And this could be chemotherapy for any variety of cancers.
Yep. Okay. Breast cancer.
And I think definitely getting a skin check is important by a board-certified dermatologist, someone who uses dermoscopy, that special tool that we were talking about. And in our clinic, we use dermoscopy with every skin check, and we take photos. So it's a very in-depth exam. Yeah.
Yeah, dermoscopy is the way to go. The way to go.
Well, thank you for that question, and thank you, ladies, for the answer. We do have another email, and this one is about rosacea. So first, we'll have you tell us about rosacea, but the question is that there are topical medications that treat rosacea, but they may not be safe during pregnancy or during breastfeeding. So what are other treatment options for this period? So maybe start with what rosacea is.
Yeah, so rosacea and acne, they're commonly, they look very similar, and to the untrained eye, it may be hard to distinguish, but acne is centered around clogged pores. We call these comedones. Whiteheads are closed comedones. Blackheads are called open comedones. And even though acne, this true acne vulgaris, it's common in teenagers, we also see it in adults. Rosacea, on the other hand, it's primarily more of a vascular inflammatory condition, not so much a pore clogging one. And it can cause this persistent redness, easy flushing, and these acne-like bumps that usually occur on the mid-face. We see it often in adults, and it's linked to different things like the flora that lives on our skin, the organisms such as Demodex mites. Sometimes there's environmental triggers that people can be very sensitive to. But it's usually a chronic condition that requires long-term management, and we can employ things like lasers to treat it. Those are, safe in pregnancy, usually the light treatments. And it's important to know that while acne, like the regular garden variety acne, as well as rosacea, tend to be the most common, conditions that look like acne, there are other mimickers, things like this fungal acne that people often talk about, caused by a yeast that lives on our skin, and several other things that as dermatologists we're trained to distinguish, and they have different treatments, so it's important to get the right diagnosis. I think for acne and rosacea in pregnancy, azelaic acid is a commonly used ingredient. You can get it over the counter in strengths less than 10%. You just have to be careful because it can be a little bit irritating, but it's a great ingredient that people generally tolerate well, especially at low doses. Whenever you're trying anything new, do a little spot test, make sure it's not too irritating. Azelaic acid is usually the go-to for women who are pregnant and have acne or rosacea.
Okay, thank you. You mentioned the flora on the skin, so you're just talking about our natural bacteria
exactly.
That lives on our skin.
Yeah.
Okay, and then does that change based off of our environment that's leading to an increase of some of these skin conditions?
Yeah, I think this is like a hot topic in dermatology right now, and in general, like the flora, the gut flora, the skin flora.
Lots of floras.
There's a lot of floras.
And you know, foods too, right?
So like one of the more fun ones with rosacea is a little friend that lives on our skin called the Demodex mite. It's on everybody's skin, and sometimes it gets a little bit too comfortable and different, you know, environmental factors. Like if you're cleansing too much or too little, you know, that can make that balance be off.
Yeah, well, talking about cleansing, yes, there's over-cleansing, there's over-exfoliation that can happen, and it worsens the condition that you're trying to treat. Why is that?
Yeah, so, you know, many over-the-counter products that have, you know, treatments, active ingredients for acne, for rosacea, you know, it can be very irritating and harsh. I usually don't recommend things that have abrasive, like beads or particles in it that can scrape the skin. You know, acne, it can be caused by inflammation, and this can be a trigger for many people if you overdo the stripping. I do recommend if you're trying an over-the-counter ingredient to try it, you know, just a couple times a week and start slow. And making sure you're moisturizing after with something bland, fragrance-free, and gentle. That tends to be universally very well tolerated and help with patients sticking to treatment plans.
Yes, that is great information. It brought up something, but I've lost my... There was something that you said that really made me think of something. I will come back to it, but we do... have another question here about vitamin D. I think I brought that up and gave her this idea of, can you get vitamin D if you're wearing sunscreen? And is there a difference in the quality of vitamin D between sun exposure on the skin or supplements? This question is from Barbara.
Yeah, that's a great question. You absolutely can still get vitamin D with sunscreen on. You know, these measures that we take to protect ourselves from the sun are not perfect. And so some sun still will get through and you do still form vitamin D. You know, to my understanding, you know, the supplements are adequate, but yeah.
It takes about 10 minutes of sun exposure to get your enough vitamin D for you to.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
So you don't need a lot of sun exposure.
And you do get it with sunscreen.
I remembered what I wanted to say, which was about these exfoliating brushes and how you get these brushes and you're thinking you're cleansing your skin. And then right after, you know, days later, you have acne and bumps that appear. That was the question. Is that?
Yeah. So when you are overly harsh with your skin, it can cause more inflammation and you can get more little bumps. Yeah. I don't recommend the brushes. They can also grow a lot of bacteria in them and are hard to clean.
That's what I was going to say. Those brushes are...
A more elegant way to exfoliate is using a cleanser with salicylic or glycolic acid.
A chemical exfoliant.
A chemical exfoliant, especially like a wash-off one, is generally what I would recommend. So you have lower risk of irritation.
I really like glycolic acid pads.
Mm.
Wipes.
Just wipe.
So, yeah, and honestly, I'm surprised, but after I cleanse my skin, I'm still getting stuff off with the wipes. So it does dual.
Great nuggets there.
Yeah.
We have a caller, but this has to be quick because we only have about a minute. We have Lady from Juneau. Welcome to line one. Do we have Lady? No. Okay. Well, because we're really running out of time actually anyway. I'm so sorry. We're going to have them back so they can answer some more questions. What about the silicone brushes that you use for exfoliation? Better as far as bacteria, but still the same as far as...
As a dermatologist, I never use those.
I never use them, but if it brings you joy and gets you to stick with your skincare routine, I'm okay with it. Just clean it well.
If it brings you joy.
Yes.
I think we got the real information from you, and I really enjoyed the conversation. As I said, it was going to move very quickly. So before we close, why don't we just have you share one practical takeaway that you hope listeners remember today?
So I think my takeaway would be to keep it simple, moisturize more than you think, and protect your skin year-round from the sun. Don't ignore new or changing spots. If something doesn't look right or isn't improving, you know, we're here to help. Early evaluation can make a big difference.
Yeah, and a 15-minute skin check could save your life. It's quick, it's painless, provides total peace of mind, and we have availability as soon as tomorrow for appointments. So let us treat the full spectrum of your skin health.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you so much to our experts, Dr. Janine Miller and Dr. Katina Rodriguez-Bazy, for sharing your insights on skin health in Alaska and helping us understand how our environment shapes our skin. Thank you to our audio engineer, Dave Waldron, and our producers, Rachel Cassandra and Annie Feit. You can find more information on this and previous programs on our website at alaskapublic.org. Let us know your thoughts or suggestions by emailing us at line1@alaskapublic.org. This has been Line One, Your Health Connection. I'm your host, Dr. Jillian Woodruff. Thank you.
Line One is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the host and participants and not necessarily those of Alaska Public Media, this station, or its underwriters. Learn more about Line One and listen online at alaskapublic.org. This is Alaska Public Media.